Hey everyone, you're listening to Affirmative Reaction here on SiriusXM and Progress Channel 127. I'm your host, Jorge Andres Olivares. Now, just a few days ago, we all had the opportunity to watch Kamala Harris essentially become the most powerful woman, Black woman, South Asian woman to have elected office here in this country. And considering everything we saw in this most recent election, we know the importance of not only our Black women, but the Black community to make sure that we are able to actually proceed and actually have the levels of equality that we've been fighting for centuries. And it only makes sense to talk about the shoulders in which not only Kamala, but a lot of people stand on today. And one of those shoulders obviously has to be Miss Ida B. Wells. Now, Ida B. Wells was in the news not too long ago because after having left us several decades ago, won a Pulitzer Prize. And it's quite interesting because obviously, as part of her history, she was a journalist, somebody who fought incredibly hard for the advancement of civil rights, even being a co-founder of the NAACP. And so there's a lot of richness to this story associated with Miss Ida B. Wells, which makes sense why we now have a new book called Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life and Legacy of Ida B. Wells, written by Miss Wells's great-granddaughter, Michelle Duster. Now, Michelle herself is a writer, a speaker, professor, and also a champion of racial and gender equity, which we have to talk about the confluence of having to deal with sexism and racism in Miss Ida B. Wells's time, and obviously today too. And she's had a chance, Miss Duster, to edit and write several books, and a few of those books even including Ida B. Wells's writing. So excited to talk about not only this new book, Ida B. the Queen, but to talk about this moment that nearly a century after coming to prominence, looking at the fact that we have somebody in elected office who is somewhat reflecting the ideals that we saw somebody fight for at the turn of the century. So very excited to welcome Michelle Duster to Affirmative Reaction. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jorge. It was really good to meet you.
Likewise. So I kind of want to start there about knowing the history in which you come from, knowing you come from a long line of civil rights activists, specifically in the Chicago area. But when you see the elevation of someone like Kamala Harris, when you see the fact that both Kamala and someone like Michelle Obama are always recognized as the most admired women in the world, how does that make you feel knowing that it comes from a place where your family started this fight?
I think it's, important for people to recognize that Michelle Obama and Kamala Harris and all of the other women today, including myself, are where we are because of people who came before us, particularly African-American women, because we're the only women in this country who lived through, our ancestors went through 246 years of being enslaved, of being considered property, of having absolutely zero rights and no control over our bodies, our children, no economic power. So that makes our story and our experience different than any other women in this country. And it's not, in any way diminishing anybody else's history, but ours is very unique. And I think that when people recognize the incredible barriers that we overcame as a people, and obviously women having to overcome sexism in addition to racial oppression, it is a remarkable story of a people. And that's the way that I look at it. My great-grandmother was a product of her time. She was, part of a certain period of our history. She lived for 68 years, but we have a 400-year history of resistance and activism in our country. And so I just hope that people obviously celebrate and are inspired by the current trailblazers and leaders in our country right now, but also reflect on what it took for them to get where they are and just the testament to the will of a people.
Mm-hmm. I think something that's so exciting about not only this book, but about the legacy associated with Ida B. Wells is that it continues to talk about this fearlessness that we see in activists today. That despite the fact that, I mean, when you talk about the late 1800s, the early 1900s, the ability for a Black woman, a formerly enslaved Black woman born into slavery, but the fact that there was never a doubt, just kind of based off of what I've had a chance to read from the book and of her own experiences in life, that there was never a feeling as though something could not be done, that there was never a feeling of hopelessness, that there was always an optimism associated with the work that Ida B. Wells did. Do you sense that? And do you agree with that's part of the reason why her legacy is so monumental, because of the fact that she never took no for an answer?
Yeah, well, I mean, I personally, you know, I have my own theories, and I don't know if other people agree with me or not. but I personally believe that a huge part of what made my great-grandmother who she was the fact that she came of age during Reconstruction. That period of history, you know, right after the Civil War, when the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were passed, the post-Reconstruction amendments, which gave, you know, citizenship, you know, the right to vote and ended slavery. Those growing up during that time, I think for my great grandmother and others of her generation, was a sense of hope. It was a period of time where there was enormous amount of progress from, you know, transitioning from literally being property to having the right to own property, and for like Black men at that time to have the right to vote and to become educated. So there was an enormous amount of progress that took place during Reconstruction. And my great-great-grandfather, Ida's father, was very involved in politics. And I think he just, you know, took the bull by the horns and was like, hey, we're free, you know, so I'm going to get involved in, you know, all of this, you know, all these activities to take advantage of these new rights. And so she grew up in an environment that was so socially and civically engaged and very enthusiastic about embracing all of the opportunities that were available. So I think what affected her was in the 1880s, when there started to be a backlash against, like, how dare these Black people actually, you know, think they can compete. So there was a series of laws that were put into place, Jim Crow laws, that were basically, you know, to oppress and limit, you know, the progress that had been made during her childhood. And she just refused to accept going backwards. And I think that's really important for people to understand, because that's, I think, what's kind of happening now, you know, because this attitude that we're not going back, you know, to our parents, you know, or our grandparents' experience of Jim Crow and, you know, separate but equal and all of these things that happened in the 40s and 50s, nobody today is going to go backwards. And I think that my great grandmother felt she was not going to go backwards either.
I can only imagine from your standpoint, and even just kind of putting yourself in the place of your great grandmother, about how she would see 2021 in her own eyes, whether it was the aftermath of the George Floyd murder and the continued senseless killings we've seen of unarmed Black men at the hands of white authority figures. Essentially, we have videos of lynchings, which your grandmother fought incredibly hard against when she was coming into her journalistic prime. Have you had those moments where you try to put yourself in that perspective, a modern day Ida B. Wells perspective of how this moment would have been viewed by her?
It's hard for me to really imagine exactly what she would think, because, I mean, even though some of the struggles are very similar, you know, I mean, she grew up in such a different time. I just think that, honestly, I feel that she would wonder why it took so long. I mean, obviously she would be you know, happy that we've had this progress. But I mean, she was kind of impatient. And that's one thing that I always grew up knowing, that she didn't have a lot of tolerance for quote nonsense. And she wanted things to be changed now. And so that was part of the frustration that she had at the time. And this was her having frustration with like the NAACP and some other organizations. She felt that they weren't working fast enough. There wasn't as much of a sense of urgency that she felt. And so I think the fact that it took 90 years after she died for the first African, a person of African and Asian descent to become vice president, part of me thinks she would have been like, I can't believe it took that long. Mm-hmm. Considering that she ran for state senate in Illinois in 1930. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what she would have thought, but part of me thinks that she would have been a little frustrated, even though we all expect her to be excited.
I love the fact that, you know, just a few minutes ago when you were talking about your great-grandmother, you're also talking about your great-great-grandfather, and that you have this wonderful knowledge of your family history. And I wish that I was in that position where I could say, well, I know what, you know, my forefathers and foremothers were doing. But let's talk about your introduction to your own history and how you were able to find out about this wonderful wealth of history that's associated with who you are and the family in which you come from.
I mean, so I grew up in a family that, I grew up in a family of educators. Almost everybody, my mom and my aunts and on both sides of my family, I'm related to Ida on my father's side of the family. Ida B. Wells was my father's grandmother. But I also have a mother's side of the family. And basically on both sides of my family, I was surrounded by teachers, by educators, in addition to like high school and grammar school teachers, there are a few people in my family who are professors as well. And so there was a high level of value of education in my family. It was just expected that everybody would go to college. There wasn't even an option. It was like, where are you going to college? When you're 5 years old, people were saying, where are you going to go to college? You know, like, it's just a given. You're going to college. It's just a matter of which one, you know. And so on both sides of my family, there was a strong sense of who came before you and how their struggle helped you have the opportunities that you have today. And I was always taught that everybody's contributions were equally important. And just my great grandmother, Ida B. Wells, happened to be famous, but that didn't make anybody else lesser than her. and we were always taught that we need to have our own accomplishments and our own achievements, and not, you know, sort of define ourselves by what somebody else's accomplishments were. And I really appreciate that, you know, because there wasn't any sense of pressure to live up to somebody else's achievements. And there wasn't really any hierarchy. And I really think I appreciate that, because it's like everybody fought in different ways for justice and equality. Everybody has their own sort of way of resisting or way of navigating their way through this country that had and to some extent still has, you know, unique barriers for people of color.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned at the beginning when I was doing the introduction to the interview, the fact that you're also a writer, in addition to not only the book that we are currently talking about, but a few other publications. And I love that the thing about writers is everybody has such a unique, specific voice. And it's a voice that you can hear, weirdly enough, through the writing in which you're reading. And I'm curious if you, based off of just also the readings that you've had of your great-grandmother, do you see similar parts of your voices? Do you think that there's something in which the voice that you used to write is taking something from what you've been able to read from your great grandmother, or do you appreciate and love the fact that it's individual all on its own?
I'm probably not a good person to sort of assess my own writing style. You know, maybe other people, when they read my work, they can tell me, you know, if they think that it has any similarity to Ida's writing. I started my career in advertising as a copywriter. And so I learned how to write in a very persuasive way and a very sort of direct way. And so in that way, it might be similar to hers, because when I've read through her writing, she was very descriptive and she was very direct. She used very specific, sort of simple ways of describing things, you know. It wasn't wordy. And so I think I might have that in common with her, just because of the way that I was trained to write. And I noticed, I mean, she's very good at describing things in sort of vivid kind of, like you can sort of see what she's describing. And hopefully my writing, you know, does that a little bit. But, you know, I mean, everybody has kind of their own style.
Mm-hmm. I went to school for journalism. And so when you do that, you obviously take all these different classes, learn about the history of journalism. And I was always very grateful to know that Ida B. Wells was included in that, because as a person of color, understanding that there were other people of color who engaged in writing in this particular way was always very humbling, because I knew that I wasn't going to be alone. But when you think about the fact that it's taken this, you know, over a century to have her work recognized in the way that it was with the Pulitzer Prize last year, like, I can only imagine like the surprise that's like that comes with that, because you wish that it had happened sooner, I can imagine. But let's talk about the joys of knowing that her legacy continues in this particular way where she is being recognized, but the others in which it seems like many people are forgetting what she did for this particular movement that we're in.
Right. Well, I mean, that was part of the reason why I, you know, wanted to write this book, Ida B. the Queen Now, in order to help people remember her, and to introduce her to another generation, and maybe remind, you know, current and older generations about her, because there are a lot of people who know about her, but there's some people who've never heard of her. And so hopefully the book will serve a purpose for both audiences. But I mean, I think that we have an issue in our country when it comes to curriculum. I worked for a little while at a publishing company, an education publishing company. So I have some perspective of the dynamics of the publishing in education, and there are decision makers, you know, involved in these industries, and they make choices on, you know, what will be included and what will not be included. So part of the reason why so many people are not familiar with my great grandmother's story is because choices were made when it came to history books, when it came to journalism books, when it came to information about women's history, or you know, a number of other kind of topics you can think about, or how she would fit in, like social work. And she was not included in those textbooks, and as well as many other people. I mean, she's not the only one who was excluded from these narratives. Even when it comes to like the history of the suffrage movement, there were many books written about the suffrage movement that just forgot, you know, to mention Black women. So this is a chronic issue in our country when it comes to who tells the story, who decides what the curriculum is going to be, who decides what movies are going to be made, and all of these other ways that people learn about history, even when it comes to exhibits, you know, at museums, and you know, we can just go down the list of how people learn about information. And so I'm hopeful at this point because there are more people who today who are working to correct those omissions than ever before. And so, I mean, that's where I feel like the work that I'm doing right now, not just with the book only, but I'm working on a lot of public history projects that are with the idea of educating the public about the contributions of my great grandmother and some of her contemporaries and even people after her, because that history has been omitted.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you did mention the suffrage movement, because this idea that we embarked on the 100th anniversary, there was a lot of commemorations of that very important moment in history. And now it was possible to have people say, well, don't forget the contributions of Black women. Well, don't forget the contributions of other women of color with regards to this movement. And I think that was very exciting. I want to end by talking about the dedication in the book, because I found it to be so poignant. You said, to all who refuse to be silent in the face of injustice, stay strong. Tell me about the importance of dedicating the book to these particular individuals.
I'm impressed by, you know, the level of activism that I'm seeing, that I've been seeing in recent years, and this attitude that we will not accept, you know, just chronic and permanent injustice. And I know that kind of work is not easy. You know, I think sometimes the toll that it takes on people who are in these type of fights is underappreciated. And, you know, so I just wanted to sort of let people know to, like, you know, you can stay, you know, stay strong and stay focused, and, you know, we see you. And we know that you have to kind of rejuvenate yourselves at times to kind of keep going. So hopefully people will take care of themselves at the same time that they're trying to, you know, change the world.
And act change. It's not an easy task. Well, I do want to remind our listeners that the book is out now. Again, it's called Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life and Legacy of Ida B. Wells. The author is Michelle Duster. But Michelle, thank you so much for not only writing this book, but for taking some time to share the life and legacy of your great grandmother with the world. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Jorge. Thank you for this opportunity to talk to you about it.